Välkomna till Motgångspodden, avsnitt nummer 9. Dagens gäst är Andreas Lehner.
Hi and welcome to Motgångspodden, the setback pod or failure pod. Which is it? We don't know. But we do know that this episode will be in English, since we have an English-speaking guest joining us. And his name is Andreas Lehner. I'm Jonas Bergqvist, and with me is Håkan Axelsson. Hi, Håkan.
Hi, Jonas. I think you should also mention this is episode 9. It's pretty impressive, I think.
I think we are impressed with ourselves, at least. A lot of other more seasoned podcast hosts are not so impressed.
It's not about quantity, it's quality. So
That's what we keep telling ourselves anyway.
Yeah. So, yeah, in this episode, we're going to meet Andreas Lehner. He's an interesting guy. It will be a very personal episode. Andreas has a background as an entrepreneur in sort of the intersection between sustainability and fintech. So a lot of focus on that. But I think the most interesting aspect of this episode is he will talk a lot about the difficulties to manage yourself when you are in a situation where you really need to consider it's time to move on.
Mm.
And both in your professional and business role, as well as in your private life. And also, he will talk about a little bit, how does that impact you as a person afterwards, when you've made your decision? So, I think this is one of my favorite episodes. So, let's jump into Motgångspodden with Andreas Lehner.
Hi, and welcome to Motgångspodden. Today we welcome Andreas Lehner, serial entrepreneur, soon-to-be published author, and someone who's been working in the intersection of sustainability and finance basically his whole active work life. He has a lot of super interesting ideas and experience to share with us today. So welcome, Andreas.
Hi, Jonas. Happy to be here.
Awesome. So just to give a quick overview of what you've done, you started in sustainability really, really early, and you co-founded the fintech company Trine, which basically makes it easy to invest in renewable energy in third world countries through a crowdfunding platform. This company is operational now since 7 years, and you were one of the co-founders there. But you left that, and we will talk about that. And most recently, you actually continued on this journey, I would say, with a combination of sustainability and finance, but also blockchain, crypto, really, really cool stuff. So it's going to be really interesting to hear your journey here. So, could you tell us a little bit and the listeners about, except from your professional background, where do you come from? Since we're not talking Swedish, people probably understand that you're from somewhere else. So can you give us a little bit about your personal background?
Yeah, sure. Happy to. Like you said, I'm originally from Austria. So a little bit myself in Europe, but I spent a good decade in Sweden, in Gothenburg. So vi kan snacka svenska, men det blir lite dåligare och långsammare. I'm actually a Swedish citizen on paper now, so oh. I should practice my Swedish. I lived in Sweden for 10 years. I've been in sustainability since high school, basically, so since a very long time. And currently living in Spain. Barcelona moved from Sweden 2 years ago. Also one of the big changes that we can surely talk about later as well. And yeah, I'm I do a lot of things in my free time, but basically I love problem solving. And that's why I became an entrepreneur, I think, because I really enjoy fast problem solving. And I didn't really enjoy that so much in the corporate world, quote unquote. So I jumped straight into a startup out of university in the sustainability space. For me, sustainability has just been super crucial and close to my heart because it's one of the biggest challenges that we have. I mean, we have a lot of challenges, more than we had 15, 20 years ago, but that was the big one at that time. Now there's AI and whatnot that comes to the equation, but I think it's still a big one and we still haven't solved it. So trying to add my little bits and pieces here and there.
Definitely. I mean, that's the challenge where I think we cannot fail.
that's
the one we can't fail. So, also, I think where a lot of us are doing what we are doing today. So how would you say, how have your professional and personal life connected?
Yeah, I mean, like I said before, I personally love problem solving, exploring new things. I'm always like trying out something new, sometimes with weird things as well, just to like get out of my comfort zone. And that's kind of what I do already as a person. And it was very natural then to connect that with going into a startup, because that's what you do in a startup constantly, especially when you found your first company straight out of university. I mean, 99% of that experience is discomfort, because you have no clue what you're doing. I mean, you pretend a lot and you fake it till you make it, imposter syndrome, but you're constantly out of your comfort zone. And that's what I've done for a very long time, just generally speaking. So obviously that's one interconnection. Sustainability is the other one. Like I try to live a sustainable life. I do a lot of things in my private life. I'm trying to not have too much of an impact, even though I'm flying a little bit too much this last year. But anyway, I try to be sustainable in many ways, and that kind of connects me also to my companies, because I haven't really started something or worked in something that isn't connected to the impact space, at least in one way or another. Because that's what drives me, what gives me the passion and the energy to push through. And we're going to talk about challenges and roadblocks. And there's a lot. And there's a lot in every startup journey. So for me, it was just not doable for something that I don't feel passionate about. So
that's really good.
May I jump in, Jonas?
Yeah.
Clearly, sustainability has been a driving force for you. But why startups? Because startups are a lot about business, and business are not necessarily about sustainability.
No, that's true. They are not necessarily about sustainability. I mean, that's basically just what I went through when I was exploring what I wanted to do. Like for me personally, I wanted to work in sustainability. I didn't know where, because it's a big subject. You don't, like, there's so many problems you could tackle in just that one bubble. And I worked at big corporations, and I just really didn't like the speed that we had in those, like the bureaucracy. There was just really nothing was getting done, or it was getting done, but it was getting done very slowly. And I worked in a startup that was part of my, while I was still studying, and I really enjoyed the startup experience because we were just getting things done immediately. Like there was no discussion. And also you have a lot of responsibilities, not only one. And I'm a generalist, but probably connected to all the things that I'm trying out. I also try a lot of things out when I work. Like I can design a homepage, I can like cut a video, I can hire a person, I can do a lot of things. And I don't want to just do one thing, because that really gets boring for me at some point. So for me, that was just the natural way of starting a company, because it just like connects to my strengths. Like I just feel very much at home when I cannot do anything amazing, but I can do a lot of things good enough.
That's cool. Going out of your comfort zone means that sometimes things will not go as planned, or maybe even that you fail at something. And of course, this part is a lot about that, like challenges, setbacks, failures. And I was going to ask you, what is a failure to you, if you would define it? What's your definition of a failure?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult because it's very personal. I think what we define as failures I think on the one side, how I would define a failure is really when you didn't really give it your best, when you didn't really try. That's for me a real failure, because everything else kind of goes the way that it has to go anyway. I mean, it's a failure externally, because then you compare it to other people, and then it becomes a failure because you're not Elon Musk that is running 5 companies, or your company didn't go ahead, or your relationship didn't work out. But that then failure is more of a definition of how you compare yourself to other people. But like the real definition of personal failure for me is when you want to do something, but you do it half-heartedly, or you don't even do it, then you have failed. But if you try to do it, you will fail externally with the external validation, but internally, you know, you've tried at least.
That's interesting. Yeah, we all have our definitions, and I think that's kind of a starting point in order to explore it, that you kind of have to discuss what it even is. So I think maybe let's just get into it. I think, please tell us a little bit about your journey with your first startup, and what kind of, looking at the things you said, like, what were failures there, maybe from your own side, or setbacks, and what have you learned from it? So, but please tell us a little bit more about Trine, because I know that all listeners maybe don't understand the whole thing, and it was just a short intro for me. So please.
Sure. I mean, how Trine started basically was that Sam, one of my co-founders, had the idea of launching a crowdfunding platform for impact projects in emerging markets. The main reason for that being that you need a lot of money in those places. Like Africa, for example, doesn't have the financial system that we have in Europe. So there's a lot of money missing to actually put the infrastructure in place to go to a sustainable future. I mean, we need the same in Europe, but there's a lot more banks, pension funds, etc., that at least have the money on their balance sheet. Not saying that they do the right things with it, but anyway, that's a different conversation. And I personally experienced emerging markets when I was studying. I went to Kenya during my master, and I wanted to work in sustainability, and I had experience in solar, so that's how we kind of started. And then we focused the whole idea on financing solar energy projects in emerging markets as a crowdfunding platform. The company still exists and is doing really great right now. And I was one of the 4 co-founders in the very beginning. So we were 4 people that started this. Actually, now it's nearly 10 years ago, nine years and something, when we really started working on the business idea. And we went up to 30 people. But we faced, obviously, a lot of challenges in that journey. And some of them are personal, some of them are business. One of the biggest challenges that we faced, I would say, was really COVID and going into the COVID period. For many reasons at that time. I think one is that we were planning to scale as a company, and we were raising money for that, but we didn't manage to finalize the fundraising, which is always the startup like problem. You always have that every year and a half, because our lead investor didn't want to continue, because they wanted to focus on the existing startups, because COVID hit. They didn't know what's going on. They wanted to save the money for whatever their existing investments needed. So they dropped out, and we decided at that point in time to focus on being profitable and not raising a big round. And that meant that people in the team left or were made to leave, which was the first time that happened in the company history, because we didn't really have to do that before. We had a few people leaving, a few people getting fired here and there, but that was really a big one. And also the whole culture changed. Like the whole culture changed in a different direction. I think part of it was necessary, but it was also not a great experience for a lot of people, me included. And we really started to focus. And that was like really tough, because until then, we had our little challenges here and there, but we were always going somewhere. And this was like a moment where we were getting stuck. Like we were in a situation where we didn't really know what was going on. The sentiment of a lot of people was changing more towards negative. I think before that, we were very much a can-do team. Everybody could do anything, and we were just like getting things done. And that situation where in a relatively short period, a lot of the people left or like were fired, changed that attitude a little bit. and people became a little bit more like, don't really want, do I still want to be here? It's not as fun. I think we had also this idea of that we are family, which for better or worse didn't work anymore, because family, you don't fire family. So that was, I think, it was really fun to have that culture. But from a business point of view, it was really hard to have that culture when things went south, because then you really have to, you have to change the whole culture because the family got fired.
That's a really interesting aspect of building a close culture. You describe it as a family. Assuming when you were in that can-do mode, it was an asset to be like a family culture. But when you were hit by basically external challenges, it turned the other way to be tough, to be a family and have to fire family members.
Yeah, especially, I mean, we were faced with external challenges for quite a while, but that was like one that we had to really adapt to. Like the other ones, we were just trying to push through as a unit, and that one we actually lost parts of our unit. And the feeling of family disappeared. I mean, I know nowadays the company is very different, and that is not really there anymore, which I think for the people that work there now, it works. But I mean, the team that we were in the beginning, I mean, that's anyhow normal, but there's hardly anybody left that was there from the beginning, because it's just not a place where those people wanted to stay. So that was obviously a big challenge. And if I would start a company, I mean, I've started companies before, and it's a very thin line to walk. I still haven't figured it out, how much you want to be personal and create this family space, and how much you want to keep it professional and be like, you need to do your work, because you need to do both in a way. And I think we were too much on that side. I really liked it, but it didn't survive.
I want to ask a follow-up question. So for full transparency, I've also worked at Trine, so I recognize, and we all obviously have different takes on it. I do think that it was inevitable parts of it, because it is a natural progression that companies evolve. They are in different phases. The people, I mean, some might have felt that, you know, you have to leave because you can't be there, or I don't like it. But I also think for some, it's more that you also realize that, oh, it was the right time at that time, but now it's time for something new for me as well. But when you look back on it now, it's been some years, what are your learnings from that experience, would you say? And is it anything that you think now that if I or the people at the company at that time, if we would have been a bit better prepared, or if we had had those discussions, it still probably would have been great challenges, but maybe not. Because I read in a bit that it was quite emotional, this experience as well.
Yeah, it was definitely quite emotional. And I mean, for me, looking back, and that's one of the first failures we can talk about, I think, is that I didn't really realize when I should leave myself, my own startup. And I stayed, I overstayed. And that's actually a red thread for most of my failures. I tend to overstay situations that I should not overstay in. But anyway, I mean, I think for me, it was kind of the moment where I started having a stronger disagreement with my co-founding team. And we couldn't really, and there was no way of finding a common ground, because for many other reasons, which we can get into, I wasn't necessarily in a position anymore to really affect a lot of the decisions in the company. And that's another portion of a failure, which is connected to some other personal experiences. I would have done things differently in retrospective. I mean, I've learned some things. I think transparency completely disappeared in that period of the company, or it disappeared to quite an extent. And I think most of the decisions we made, like you said, Hannah, were correct because we needed to make them. But I think we could have made them different. That's my main learning. I think there was a way of communicating things that wasn't my style and was overruled by other people in the company, because they had more say how to, like, in the decision-making process, let's say.
I think that's really interesting because it ties into another discussion we had pretty recently with another guest, is that the communication is really hard. And I can also think that it's even harder when you're a young entrepreneur. I mean, leadership and communication usually takes a lot of experience unless you're a supernatural at it. And I mean, I've worked in a lot of companies, and it can be super hard with proper communication, even for really seasoned execs. So I think that's a really good learning that you're taking there. It's like you can't really, you can't stress enough how important communication is, especially in a crisis situation, or at least not even crisis, but a strained situation. It's really good. Have you thought about that afterwards or in other later stages to do it differently?
I think communication is always a challenge and always something that you need to improve on, and you're never going to be perfect. I mean, it's such a thin line between pure like brutal honesty, which is not always a good thing either, and politically walking around the bush trying not to talk about it. I think the communication that I've had, at least in the co-founding teams that I've created since then, has been very different, because I think my co-founding team, we never really had we gave each other feedback, but I don't think we were very honest with each other for quite a big chunk of the journey. And I'm trying to really do that in terms of feedback and just really trying to establish this trust even more.
Would you say that was because of like lack of maturity, or just experience, or just personalities? It can be a mix, of course, but I'm thinking that when you come straight out of school and you think you're the best, everyone thinks that, so it can be different, and then you have to, compared to 10, 15, 20 years experience years later.
Yeah, I think for me personally, it was a maturity thing, because I came out of university. My co-founder, one of them, was more seasoned, let's say, with 10 years of experience. So, I mean, he knew more how to lead a company. I was completely green, so I was most of the time trying to hide that I didn't really know what I was doing, at least for the first two years or something, or 3 years. And I was preoccupied with just trying to fake it that I know what I, and that's why we didn't have that honesty, because I didn't feel like I could talk about that with my co-founding team, because I felt like I need to be better and I'm not good enough. Versus now, I know that we're all humans and we all have our weaknesses. And back then, I felt like we need to be perfect. So it's a maturity thing. But then it's also a personality thing. Like, some of the people involved have more of a personality of not going to deep subjects when you talk about it. So we never really had these conversations about how do you feel in the same way that I do them now, in a way. But, I mean, that was like a bigger company challenge, I would say. I mean, for me personally, that period was a challenge altogether, because I think like I overstayed two situations in my life there. One was my company and the other one was my relationship. And they intertwined quite a bit. And in my company, I was in a situation that I should, like, for me was toxic actually at that point in time. Because I mean, don't know where to start, but basically I was so stressed with my private life that I decided to take a step back from my work and actually focus on my private life, which was a mess at that time. And over a certain period, I was asked to actually also step out of leadership of my own company, because I wasn't really in a position to lead, to be quite honest. So it was actually not a bad decision. How it was done is a different story, but... And then for nearly 2 years, probably a little bit more, I was kind of working under a co-founder that I brought into the company, which was the weirdest work situation I've ever had. And for a while, even under an employee that we brought into a company. And I mean, it just didn't work for me. And that's the moment where I should have left. I should have been like, yeah, guys, this is not working. I'm either leaving or we change this. But instead, I was trying to make it work for nearly 3 years. And I should have left long ago before that.
I mean, I think it's really interesting when you said this with overstayed and so on. And given where you are now,
because this seems to be a bit of a pattern in your life. And I think for some people, I can recognize sort of the grit character, and that you also maybe have a positive, sometimes you just feel like maybe it's possible to turn this around or whatever it could be. But what's your perspective on it now? Would you say that you would have an easier time to find those flags in yourself and be able to actually get out or do the decision that is ultimately right, both for you as an individual, as well as probably the rest of the group that's affected?
Yeah, I think it becomes easier when you're in a similar situation. Like, let's say if I would be in a company where I feel like the work environment or the relationships become slightly toxic, or in a relationship where you try to fix things. But then when you're in a new situation, it's again really difficult. Like my last company, which just started to wind down, we went like maybe... No, not 6 months, but somewhere towards 3 to 6 months discussing where we're going and what's the steps and if we should stop. Because that was a new situation. I never had to do that decision of actually winding down a company, because that was just not something that happened until then. And then it was the same pattern again. I think it's just maybe a personality thing. You become a little bit better, but you still have a tendency, I think.
So we talked about, and you mentioned also that you felt that this, you were not only in a tricky situation at work, but you were also in a tricky situation in your personal relationship. And you see that maybe the outcome there was maybe a sort of a personal failure for you. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, basically, like, there was two thunderstorms, or whatever you want to call it, combining at the same time, which wasn't good or easy. But I mean, I was pretty stressed out at work, like you are when you're running a startup, and feeling overwhelmed as well, because I was handling a lot of things and running, like leading a team. And I was, 3 years out of university or something like that. And it worked, but it was not, mental health wasn't on top of where I've been. And then my relationship kind of didn't work out at that time. Me and my partner at that time, she broke up. And it was like my first real relationship, my first real all-in, this is the person, let's do this kind of experience. And I didn't think that's going to happen. It was like not a possibility on my map. So it was like, what the hell is this? And I think I had this mentality from the startup world that I can fix anything. So I just went into fixing mode and started to try to fix something that wasn't meant to be fixed. And it's nothing about the person. It's just that I think we were not the perfect match in the end that I thought we were. Very different personalities from two very different parts of the world. And we broke up 3 times in 2 years. So it was a real mess, emotional mess. And after the first one, that was when I didn't take that decision very consciously. I think I did it more subconsciously, but I was like, I need to choose. Am I going to put my energy into work, or am I going to put my energy into private relationship? I cannot do both right now, because it was just too much. And I kind of made the decision to do it with my private relationship, not in a very professional way either. But I was like, I need to step down from my team leadership. I need to focus on my life right now. I don't have energy for this. And then maybe after 6 months, we went back together, and 6 months later, we broke up again, or she broke up again. And I went into kind of the same spiral, even before I should have learned. It's like, okay, 2 times, maybe. And again, a year later, same story, together and apart again. I mean, this is a very simplified version of a messy 2 years that I don't want to do again. I'm definitely not going to do that ever again in my life. But that didn't put me in a very emotional, healthy place. Like, I was very insecure. I felt like very, what's wrong with me? And I didn't have, and that's also why I couldn't lead in the company either, because I wasn't feeling like I was in a leading position. I was just trying to patch my life together and not feel like an idiot. And yeah, I mean, that kind of made it even more complicated when in my work the same things happened. Like, I was in toxic work relationships with an employee that we shouldn't have hired, with my co-founder who, I mean, God bless him, but I cannot work underneath him. It's just like there's no chemistry match. And it just felt like the same. It's kind of like feeling rejected in your private life and in your professional life. And you just try to stick through, try to steer the boat through the storm without capsizing. And what I should have done is just quit both things, because realizing I'm not feeling good here and I go somewhere else and recharge and actually find myself again, because I lost myself quite a bit in both worlds. It took me quite a while to find my own strength again afterwards.
The reason why you were sticking in both, yeah, I think personal relationships might be different, but when in your professional relationships, was that because you felt that you had promised or taken on something, you felt if I would bail out, I'm actually failing someone else? What was your driver? Why stay?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think one part is the interpersonal relationships. Like, you don't want to give up. You don't want to be a quitter. So you just do whatever you can, even for maybe like what Hannah said before, it's better for everybody involved that that person is doing something else. The other one is just that story is not really being told either. As a startup founder, you don't quit your company. Like, I haven't really heard that before. I have read more stories now. But we always talk about the Elon Musks in the world that run 5 companies at the same time, and everything is like just before shit, but he's just sleeping on the floor in his factory and it's going to be all fine in the end. It's like a fairy tale.
But he's also a bit crazy. We need to add that to the notes of his program. Yeah. I've read the book and it's not anything I would recommend.
No, I mean, mental health is, I think, a different conversation with Elon Musk in particular. But that's the startup story that we tell ourselves. Like, the ending is either IPO, exit in another way, or fail, the company fails. But you don't leave a working company. It's just like, it's a weird thing to do. Why would you do that? And that was just not an option. Like, I signed up to start a company. I was one of the captains of the ship for quite a long time. So why, like, the captains go last? And that was the story that I told myself. And just, like, kind of pushed the thing to success, whatever that looks like. And I would have done that, but I think, it's like I had to realize that my journey was over. In that adventure. And that's a really difficult thing to figure out. What's the difference between being a quitter and just leaving too easily when you encounter something hard? And when is a situation not serving you and you're not serving the situation and it's better that you take parts? It's very difficult to differentiate the two. And I still don't have the recipe for it, but I definitely didn't have a clue back then.
I'm pretty sure there are people out there that are in exactly that situation that you're describing right now. So can you recollect if there were a special moment, some way sort of you realized, now I'm ready to make the decision to step out? Was there any special occasion, or how come you eventually decided this is not for me?
Well, how it happened for me, I think on the one side, my personal messiness started stopping because there was no more mess for a year or something. I could focus on myself instead of another person. And in that process, I went out of my bubble. I changed environment, which for me was a trip to Tenerife, Barcelona, Spain, by myself, solo trip, meeting new people. And I mean, a lot of these things sound very cliche. But like one thing for me was like having a conversation with just a group of strangers where I was already contemplating for quite a while to leave. But I was also like, who am I without my job? Who am I without my startup? I'm the founder of X, or I cannot leave. And they were like, we don't even know what your company does and we like you anyways. So what's the problem? That was for me like, yeah, right. I was too much identified with my role And it was very difficult to detangle that. But that was like the first moment where I realized, okay, I was a person before and I can be a person afterwards. And the other one was that I met a person in Barcelona that had a startup idea that was very similar to something that I was writing on when I was a student. And we clicked and I realized it's like in a relationship. I suddenly realized this is much more exciting than what I'm in right now. And that it shouldn't be like that. I mean, this is my own company, even for I might not be in the leadership anymore. And you realize that you can enjoy work again. Like for me, it became kind of like, I guess this is how it should be. Like work at some point becomes really tiring and I don't want to be there, but I'll do it anyway. And I realized, no, I actually like this. I want to do this. I have energy. I'm like 10 times more productive here than I am in my own job because I wasn't productive anymore in the end. And that was kind of the wake up call where I said like, okay, no, like if I'm not learning and I'm not earning because I mean, startup salary, we had a good salary at some point, but it's not like crazy. If I'm not doing either of the two, then I'm leaving. And that's what I did. Pretty like the decision was long time in the making, but after those two trigger points, basically, I was on my route. It was just a matter of handing over a month or two, and it was quite easy then, actually. But making the decision was really difficult until that point.
So if you summarize the process after stepping out, that this whole experience, do you feel that you grew or did you shrink in terms of sort of how you looked upon yourself? Are Andreas now, or after this experience, someone that have more confidence or less confidence?
Oh, definitely more confidence. Yeah. I mean, I could trust, like, I lost the trust in myself over that period. And that was kind of, for me, the starting point to regain the trust in myself. And for me, the world opened up because until then, I was so overloaded and I couldn't look over the horizon because I was constantly fighting some version of a battle. And that was the first time where I could actually look over the horizon and see the world and see possibilities again. That's also why I moved country at the end, because I wanted to explore again and not just try to make something work that didn't work. So it definitely was an experience of growth. And also that was for me the only way to learn from the experience. Like in the process, I couldn't really learn from it because you're so entangled with everything that you don't get perspective. You don't get objective perspective. Everything is kind of subjective and emotionally tainted. And only by actually stepping out, I could look back at some point and relatively objectively say, well, this was right. This was wrong. This is what I could have done differently, but I couldn't back then because I didn't have the tools. But this is what I would do differently next time. So it was definitely an experience of growth.
That's really interesting. I was thinking also before moving on to some other of failures that you would like to talk about is in a professional setting, you often get to deal with when someone else is failing. They might even be failing you, or at least that's what you feel like. How do you deal with that? Or how have you dealt with it prior, and how do you deal with it today? What's your view on that?
Yeah, that's difficult. I think coming, like in the beginning of my, like if we focus on professional life for now, I was, like you have the tendency to believe that everybody else knows what they're doing and I'm the only one that is kind of figuring it out. So in that way, often you give the other person the benefit of the doubt. Like we had a person, I remember that in the company that we should have probably fired much earlier, but I didn't believe we should fire that person because maybe I'm wrong and that person is right. So I didn't really have a definition so much of a person failing me. I always kind of thought, what did I do wrong and what could I have done differently to make this person succeed? But now, and I mean, we had that back then as well, but now I think it's even more obvious for me is like, at least have a really good feedback culture. And we had feedback, but I think at some point along the way, it didn't work anymore. Where you can share that with a person and you can share it in a way that they understand it as well. Because I think what we sometimes did at Trine was a lot of people were surprised that they got fired. And I think that's the worst. Like, I don't want to have a person that is surprised when they got fired. They should know that it's coming. And I think that's related to how you communicate and how honest you are with feedback and what's the consequences if things don't work out. So if a person fails me these days, like I had with my co-founding team sometimes, my co-founders were not necessarily performing or doing the things that we were saying that we're going to do, then we have a very honest conversation that if we want to build this, then we need to be on this level. Otherwise, there's no point. And that was one of the reasons why we decided to wind down in the end as well. We had very different work styles, but it wasn't the main reason. But it's all about honest feedback and also defining what is failure and what is success, which I think what we did at Trine not so good in the beginning. It was very unclear. And then it was very difficult for a person that is, like, if I'm your subordinate, your boss, I cannot define failure if I haven't told you what you should actually be doing and what the expectations are from you. So I think that's something, if there's a very clear expectation, you can measure it, then you can have a very honest conversation and it doesn't become very subjective, which normally it ends up being otherwise. And I think personally, like if a person fails you, generally speaking, outside of work, I mean, first of all, give the people the benefit of the doubt. But if people do the same thing repeatedly, then you need to listen to their actions and define what that failing you means and have consequences for it. Otherwise, people either don't change or, yeah, I would call it a toxic relationship at some point.
But then I'm curious, because failure can also be good, right? In the sense that it depends on what type of failure we're speaking with. Now we're referring a lot to maybe previous conversations we've had with guests, but what I've always found very fascinating with the startup community and the startups I've encountered or worked in and so on, is that it seems to be very tricky to... like, it's one thing to fail with, oh, we did a market test here. It's fine. You know, we learn something. We take the data. We develop something new. But how do you create a culture of failure? Because now when you talk about it here, it sounds a bit like it's actually not necessarily good that people fail. Or what type of failures should be encouraged?
Yeah, I guess there's like if we talk about work here, I guess there's different versions of failing. One is like if you say like we have a goal and we don't do that, that's a failing in another way. Like you say that you're going to do something but you don't do it, that's a different failing than I think what you're talking about now, which is very important, is trying out new things and then not really knowing what the outcome is, right?
But maybe it's actually more towards the, because you mentioned imposter syndrome, which I think a lot of people can relate to, either consciously or subconsciously. And I think there's a lot of situations in especially in startups where people probably live through that, but nobody either knows it at the time or would want to admit it. Do you see any, because you said that you experienced this a bit in the beginning, do you see any way where one as a group or a culture actually could sort of tackle that imposter syndrome head on, more as a group, as a collective?
I think the only way that you can tackle imposter syndrome is to be honest about it. And I think we all have it all the time. I'm not over my imposter syndrome. It's not gone. It just doesn't disappear, especially in particular when you take on bigger challenges constantly in whatever shape they come. You'll have imposter syndrome until you die, most likely, if you don't become a monk and meditate 3 hours every day. I think the only way that we can overcome imposter syndrome is really to understand that everybody has it. And the only way to really understand that everybody has it is to have an honest conversation about it and not, at least in my opinion, and not feel like you're the only one, because imposter syndrome comes from a place where you feel that you're the only one that is feeling like this and you don't deserve what you're doing and you're stupid or whatever it is. But I think we all, most of us have that in one shape or form. and there's very few people that don't have it. But I mean, with my co-founding teams, like one thing that had changed since the first startup experience was that we talk about that particular element quite honestly, because in the first iteration, that was never a conversation. That was never like, and now it's a very thin line, but you talk about it. It's like, well, this is how I feel. And then you can share your feelings quite openly. Like you do in a relationship, in a way, you have to be able to talk about your emotions and in that way deal with that.
Mm. I was thinking, since you brought it up, that maybe next up is to talk a little bit about experiences you had with Power Blocks, since this is something where you actually, it's like you could say your official second startup, I guess you could call it, which I remember because you and I had a conversation with another individual a while ago. I think it was when you were kind of starting up or were thinking about starting up Power Blocks. It was like basically blockchain and renewable energy, there's something there. And we discussed it. Mm-hmm. And then it was really cool to see you starting up Power Blocks. So I thought, because this is a tip to all the listeners, that you actually wrote a piece about it on your learnings and the journey on LinkedIn. So I thought we should talk a little bit about it. And I think the first thing is maybe you can just talk about coming to Barcelona and setting this up and why you set it up and who you set it up with. And then walk us through the experience and what you said, you know, you followed your learnings, but you gained some new ones here.
Yeah, definitely. No, I mean, so I moved to Barcelona and actually the journey becomes quite winded because it wasn't actually the first thing afterwards that I started. So between Power Blocks and me coming to Barcelona, there was like two other business ideas and I came for a different business idea to Barcelona. And that was for me kind of the step into the no man's land or the unknown land because you come from a very stable place. I mean, as a company after 7 years is relatively stable and you go back into the very unstable phase where things change all the time. So the first startup idea I worked on 3 months probably and we decided it doesn't work. And then the second one, 6 months, and then a bit of break in between, figuring out what you're doing, what the hell is going on. And then basically jumped into Power Blocks. The way that it came about was I was really getting interested in the blockchain space and especially the overlap between blockchain and environment, because I still had my heart in sustainability. But one of the other failures I did, I was gambling or I was putting a lot of money into kind of all kinds of cryptos for not so successful outcomes. And for that, I got into touch with like this overlap and I read a paper on it and I got really into it. And when I left the last idea that we were developing, I was in this no man's land and I felt quite alone. Because nobody talks about these phases where you transition, you don't really know what you're doing, you have no plan, you just quit or not quit, but you just ended a startup journey again. And compared to my first time doing that, there was no path to go. I didn't know what I'm going to do afterwards. So it was very lonely. So I created this group of people in a similar situation. A friend of mine told me it might be a good idea to not feel so alone. We were like 10 people that we call entrepreneurs in transition, which was people for different reasons, either for the good reason of selling the company, which I think you enter the same space, so they don't have anything to do, or the people that the company didn't work out. So we had maybe for a month, 2 months, we had weekly, bi-weekly sessions, talked about different subjects, coached each other. And in that, I met one of the co-founders for this Power Blocks idea. Because we had similar interests, we talked about crypto, we talked about environment, and so we decided to give it a go. That was kind of the starting point.
It sounds like an anonymous entrepreneurs meeting, where you sit and, hey, my name is Andreas, I'm an entrepreneur.
Yeah, that's basically how it looked like. It was kind of like, let's not talk about this too much, but I don't know what I'm doing. I don't have a clear career path. I don't know what's next, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
I think it's a pretty cool thing. You know, that could be an idea in itself, because there are a lot of these networks for, you know, CEOs and, you know, people that are into startup. But what about a lot of people going through a transition phase, like you described? They just get together and talk about your experiences and get some new ideas. It's quite a good idea, I think, to have something like that.
Yeah, I think there's definitely some customers out there for this kind of idea. And we actually made the most productified version we made was like a book club where we read a book called Design Your Life or Design Your Work Life. And we did that for 10 weeks. So that was definitely very helpful. And if somebody wants to build it, there it is. You have the idea. Go for it.
It's great that the entrepreneurs, they have to build something while doing the therapy. They can't just do it. They just, you know, have to produce a product.
Yeah, we have a problem. I don't know what it is, but yeah. No, I mean, that was a really, it was kind of like therapy in a way, but out like self-led therapy. And I mean, we didn't do it for very long because most people found something to do again after 2 months. But in that 2 months, it was a really interesting group of people, and we definitely learned a lot from each other as well. And I mean, the main reason that I started it was that me and other people don't feel so alone in this process, which I think we succeeded in that. And then we started PowerBlocks, where the idea, but there was a few pivots, but the basic idea that was the red thread was we wanted to use excess energy and monetize it. So either be it in a solar plant that gets disconnected from the grid because the grid is overloaded, or a wind power installation does the same, or in the beginning we looked at solar mini grids in Africa where they have excess power, and in the end we looked at methane on landfills where there's no use case. And instead of just wasting it, we were like, hey, we can actually use Bitcoin as a tool because Bitcoin uses electricity and monetizes it and just make money out of it, which should actually reduce the electricity costs because you can sell more solar energy, etc., etc., yada, yada, yada. That was the idea. Very different from Trine because it was a hardware idea. It was actually infrastructure. I was very naive, and I think that's maybe my one of the reasons why I'm in entrepreneurship, Håkon, is like I'm very naive, and I think things are very easy until you work on things and you realize, shit, this is actually a lot harder.
How hard can it be?
Yeah, exactly. So that was the idea, and we can go into the details if you want, but we did that for a year, and compared to my first startup journey, I started realizing that we were not moving at some point. We hit a wall. And for a good 6 months, we were really trying to break that wall, but we didn't really move anywhere. It was hard to fundraise. It was hard to get a pilot customer. It was like all the milestones that we set ourselves. I mean, the important ones, not all of them, but the important ones we didn't really succeed on. I mean, that was failure for me. It's like, okay, we haven't hit this milestone. And at Trine, we hit our milestones in the beginning, which for me led to a period of slowly draining my energy. Like I was getting more and more annoyed and frustrated, and I didn't enjoy working anymore. And for a day or a week at the time, it's fine, but it was like 3-4 months of kind of dragging myself to work and just like, okay, we can do this, which obviously is not the perfect environment to start a company nor to go to success. I don't think you're going to be successful with that kind of energy. And then, we just realized that it's time to, for several reasons, which I put in this blog post. I mean, one of them was that the passion wasn't there, but there was also that we were not the right team. I think we didn't have the right industry connections. We didn't really get into we didn't open the doors. We didn't manage to open the doors. We didn't manage to fundraise either. We were in a space that was very polarized. So it was kind of slowly fizzling out in the end of the day. And at some point I said like, okay, either we're going to decide that we continue or we decide that we're going to shut it down, but I'm not going to be in this zombie startup where we're kind of dead, but not really. We're still doing a little bit, but let's see what happens. Let's do 10 other things at the same time just to not rely on this. And I was like, okay, either we're going to give this another push or we quit. I don't want to call it quitting, or we call it a day. And we decided to call it a day in the end.
If you compare this decision to walk away with the other decision that we talked about earlier, which were maybe a little bit more personal, but how would you describe this decision? Was it harder or easier? And if it was easier, was it because of your previous experience?
It's hard to say if it was easier, it was different. I mean, one difference was that it was only 1 year versus seven. So this identity attachment wasn't fully there, even though it was already there. It's like, oh, I'm the, like whenever you go somewhere, it's like, what are you doing? Oh, I'm the co-founder of X. And then you're like, oh, I don't have to go back to, I don't really know what I'm doing phase. I'm not really interested in going there. I think it was harder for the reasons of that it was a different situation. Like one was leaving and knowing that the company will be fine. Because I was also in a situation where I could actually leave. I wasn't that important anymore at that moment in time, even though I might have felt very important. But here we actually shut the company down, which felt like a completely different level of failure. Because it's like, it's not only personal, like, okay, I'm not here anymore, but you guys continue and good luck. And I believe in you. Here was actually like, okay, we failed. We didn't really get anywhere. We didn't have a lot to show either. We did a collaboration with the UNDP. We had some contracts, but like the things that I wanted to see as like proof that we've done something, they were not there. We didn't have a pilot installation. We didn't have an investor, nothing like tangible. We'd had a very pretty slide deck, a lot of calls, and yeah, like digital stuff. So for me, it was kind of really difficult to say, okay, this is over, because nobody tells you. It's like you have to tell yourself. Like nobody externally says, this is not going to work. And if, I mean, people do, but if they do it, then you're like, I'm going to prove you wrong. And nobody has this inside of you where they're like, hey, for this point and this point and this point, I believe that this is not going to work. But you need to prove it to yourself. I mean, you cannot. If you do what other people say, you're never going to go anywhere. So like realizing yourself that this is not going to work is really, really difficult. And I mean, in the end, that's why it took us 6 months. So I wouldn't say it was easier because it was a different decision. It was probably harder because I was getting frustrated that this thing again doesn't work out. I'm like, okay, when am I finally having something that actually works?
So, but you describe your earlier transition or decision as a growth experience. How did you describe this decision and experience?
I mean, we learned a lot, so it's definitely growth as well. And I mean, for me, it was very clear once there was a bit of the, like once the dust had settled a little bit, I realized again for different reasons that I was in a toxic situation. I don't want to overuse toxic too much, but I felt my energy coming back. I felt like I had drive to do things and other things. And like I was starting to help a person with their own startup idea and building the MVP for them. And I was really enjoying that. So it's like, there is something where maybe I need to listen to my intuition a little bit more. And when something doesn't feel good, I don't have to push for it. I just need to know, okay, it hasn't felt good for 1 day. Let's give it a bit more time. Hasn't felt good for 2 months. Okay, maybe it's time to quit or to leave. And that's probably one of the learnings that I took with me, because also when I compare it to my first startup, in the beginning, it was really challenging, but it was also a lot of fun. Like we had a lot of fun and it was really energizing even for me. I was tired for other reasons. I was looking forward to go back and to continue and to push. And I wasn't doing that here. I wasn't looking forward. Every day was like a drag. And I think that was for me like the growth in a way to be like, okay, you need to listen to how you feel more, because it actually tells you something and it's not always something that you need to overcome or ignore, which is, I think, what often happens otherwise.
That's really true. So you to round that off, you write in your write-up of this experience that, you know, it's important to make the decision to wind down faster, to realize it's not working, but also to have a different relationship with failure. Do you feel that your relationship to failure changed in this situation, when it happened in the moment? Did you already then feel that it was so different and you could...
Yeah, I mean, I'm still working on my relationship with failure, like we all do, I think. It's definitely shifted somewhat, because I think when you're building something, or whatever it is, actually, whatever you are in, you always think it's like the biggest thing in the world, and it's so important, and everybody's gonna care, and then you fail, and either nobody really cares in a good way. It's like, okay, well, yeah, moving on, next thing. Or people actually, some people congratulate you. It's like, yeah, good that you made a decision and I think you learned a lot. Like a lot of my friends were like, yeah, I mean, great, moving on, next. Like it feels a lot less heavy in a way than you make it out to be. I have all these stories in my head, like failure, my God, I tried the third startup idea, didn't work out. What am I going to do now? It's like I'm a failed serial entrepreneur. I mean, I cannot even call myself a serial entrepreneur because I haven't even had another exit or whatever. I haven't even raised money. And then you're like, yeah, but I tried. And then people, in a way, you get the external view a little bit, and it's not always the best thing. But in that situation, it was kind of good to be like, yeah, okay. People actually still think that you've done something good, even though you think that you didn't go where you wanted to go, that you didn't reach your own expectations. It's still not seen as a failure in that way externally. Then you have to define it personally and redefine it, which took a little bit as well.
I think you talk also about it's really important to be passionate about your work. And I think I would like to kind of end this talking about something that you're working on right now. And as you know, I mean, innovation, which you've been doing for basically all your life, is to create value for others. And right now it seems that you're finalizing a book, actually. And the topic is money, but also, and I would say, personal finance, and with a sustainable angle. And I think this is really interesting, because something that a lot of people actually fail at is personal finance. If you ask a lot of people, you know, are you good at finance? Are you, you know, do you know what you're doing with your savings? A lot of people actually say, I don't like that. So I think this is really a great endeavor from your side. And I think this is something that, you know, first step is maybe just do something about your personal finance. But then a lot of people, of course, they're like, okay, but I would really like my money to go towards sustainable things. So I think this is a super interesting topic. So could you talk a little bit about the book? And because it seems you started this a while ago, right?
Yeah, this was my COVID project. So it's been a while. I haven't worked on it all this period. It's been on the bookshelf for quite a while as well. But basically what I started an investment company, and that kind of catapulted me into the investment world, or the way of thinking in terms of investments. So when I had like the first real funds to invest, I started really to look at, okay, I want to do this sustainably. I don't want to just put it in whatever comes across and a monthly invest into that. So I really, over many years, tried to understand how can I invest my money sustainable in a way that actually contributes to the world. Because at the end of the day, and that's what I learned with my first startup, and Hannah knows this probably even better than me from all the pitching. I mean, money is, or your investments is, if you just one choice towards sustainability, make it your investments. That's the most powerful decision you can make, because that's where things happen. Because money is like energy, where you put it, things will happen. And unfortunately, our traditional investment world and our banking world is still very non-sustainable. So you actually need to do something extra to make your investment sustainable. It doesn't happen by itself. But it's something that takes not that much time, and it's automatable, and then it's done. So actually, compared to becoming vegetarian, flying less, or whatever else you can do, it's actually also kind of the easiest thing to do, if you just take the decision to do it. Because once it's done, it's kind of done. But people don't know what to do. It's very unclear, and there's a lot of funds out there that are called ESG and blah, blah, blah. But then they invest in Apple or Amazon or an oil company. So you're like, yeah, is that sustainable, really? So the kind of the book is a way of not only explaining why it's important and what it is, but then also giving you more tangible tools to do it. Suggestions. It explains a lot of different investment assets, from bonds to stocks to equity, and different subcategories, and really tries to make it very simple to understand. I mean, I hope I succeeded in that, but I realized also that it wasn't so easy to put it on paper. It took a lot of structuring and make it actionable in a way so that you can actually do this tomorrow and not just theoretically talk about it.
That's super interesting. So I think everyone should go in on Kickstarter and pre-order your book. I know I will.
Yeah, it's called Mind Your Money, A Practical Guide to Sustainable Investments. It's going to launch on Kickstarter on the 14th of January. And it's also available. The link will be available on my homepage, which is andreas-lena.com. So it's also available there. And then once it's over at Kickstarter, it's going to be published also in all the normal Amazon stores and whatnot as an ebook and as a print, most likely in March next year.
This is awesome. We're really looking forward to reading the book, Andreas. And of course, people can find you on, follow you on LinkedIn. And I must say that it's, you are a very open person and that shares a lot of knowledge. And I think that even if you've liked this conversation with Andreas, you should really go into his LinkedIn page and read his write-ups of both, actually Leaving Trine and working with Powerblocks and your book and everything. So you can have even more depth and more thoughts from Andreas there. So highly recommended. Håkan and Hanna, do you have any last questions that you've been sitting on before we wrap up?
I have an hour of questions, but I will keep those. But it would just be interesting if you could give three bullet points of like advice for people who might be in different types of situations. We've discussed a lot now, but thinking, reflecting. I mean, when I hear you, I sort of, I don't necessarily only think of this as an entrepreneur being on this journey or the startup community. I'm more thinking of any type of person on the planet who have suddenly gone from really knowing what they're gonna do the next day, the day after, and so on. And there will always be things in life that throws a curveball that makes you rethink a lot of things, and you end up at some sort of personal turning point. And how to manage that if you've never faced it is quite difficult, I can say, from my own experience as well.
Yeah, and I mean, it's always like the top three advice. I mean,
I'm working communications.
There were three ways of not failing. No, I mean, I think what comes to mind, I was thinking while you were talking, I mean, I think for me, one is trust your feelings and try to really build intuition, because I think we live in a very logical world and not everything, and a lot of decisions are not logical, especially not in our private lives. I think in company world, we try to make everything logical, but I think trust your intuition. It's there for a reason. It tries to tell you something. And often we stretch our processes too much, and we could do them much faster if we trust ourselves more. And second one, I would say, don't be afraid of change. I think we're all very afraid often, me, myself included, even if I've changed a lot, every time there's a big change around the corner, it's like, oh my God, what is this going to be? But often the change that looks very different than you envisioned it, and also often better. And sometimes you cannot predict it, but change is most of the time for the better. And then the third one, I would say, find people that support you in this journey, in this process, that have been through it, that are in it right now. That's what I did. So you feel less of an outlier from the norm, because I think on a societal level, this is not really talked about. So like we said before, we often feel very isolated and lonely in this process. But if you just gather yourself a handful of people that you trust, that can also be people that you don't know yet, and just to talk about it. I think it makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, I think my only question is, besides this book, are you open to work?
Yes, I am open to work. I mean, I haven't really set my eyes on anything yet, so I'm really an open book right now. So if anybody's out there that is looking for a co-founder or for like chief of staff in a company or in a venture builder, that's something I've looked at recently. I'm happy to have a conversation and then see where that goes. But I'm looking.
Okay. I have at least one startup, which I will make a connection. We'll see where it goes.
Awesome. Great.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming to Motgångspodden, Andreas. And we're looking forward to reading your book and seeing what you tackle next with passion. So thank you so much for sharing and for being with us today.
Thank you, guys. It was a pleasure.